Hockey season has arrived, thank God, and so has Sportsnet's weekly NHL newsletter. Written and produced by NHL editor and co-host of the Tape to Tape podcast, Rory Boylan, Sportsnet's NHL newsletter delivers original content you can't find anywhere else, plus all the most important news, analysis, and videos of the week. Sign up now at sportsnet.ca/newsletters. That's sportsnet.ca/newsletters to get the most in-depth, exclusive hockey coverage delivered directly to your inbox. I like that.
The Family Man, welcome to 31 Thoughts, the podcast, brought to you by the next generation GMC Sierra trucks. Sean Couturier, Tomas Hertl, and Jacob Slavin. One of the themes that we found as we continue with our Star Series of podcasts, Elliot, one of the themes that we found in Chicago at the NHL Media Tour was players having babies and players getting married. And we'll get to three of them. And some having children by way of natural childbirth, others by way of adoption. We'll get to Jacob Slavin in a couple of moments. Sean Couturier, the player. I can still recall the draft. Winnipeg Jets' first time at the draft. And everybody in Winnipeg thought and perhaps wanted Kevin Cheveldayoff to say Sean Couturier, big scorer coming out of the QMJHL. That player, who of course went on to be drafted by the Philadelphia Flyers, has turned himself into one of the premier two-way players in the entire NHL. Your thoughts on Sean Couturier before we hear from him?
Well, first of all, Winnipeg turned out okay.
Mark Scheifele was all right.
we should tie a bow on that story. It turned out not bad for them. Couturier is a guy, I've always thought that maybe he wasn't as respected as he should be for how good he is. We talk about it in the interview, but the game he played where he had 5 points in the playoffs against Pittsburgh when he was basically on one leg just showed me a ton about him. You know, I think sometimes in life people mistake kindness for weakness or calmness for weakness. I think that's happened with him, that people have taken a look at a team with like a Giroux personality and a Voracek personality, that he's kind of a more relaxed guy, that means he's not as driven or as competitive. I think he's one of those guys that people have made mistakes about.
I think Bergeron's like that as well. There's a lot of big personalities around Patrice Bergeron in Boston.
It's tough to do that because they've won so much. But I would say probably early in his career, that was the case. But the guys won everything. I don't know how anybody could kind of feel that way about that now. And also, in that 2013 Stanley Cup final, when he was basically the man, the mummy, like he was covered in bandages, I don't know how you could feel that way anymore.
Held together by bubblegum and toothpicks. Here's Sean Couturier, one of the premier two-way players in the entire NHL on 31 Thoughts, the podcast.
Lindblom unable to get to it at the line. It's held in. And Sanheim will wrap it in deep behind the goal again. Here's the shot near side by Provorov. Save rebound. They score! It's Couturier on the spot in front. And Sean Couturier with a second quick goal in the first minute of the third. Lindholm at the far point. Over to Molitor with a shot through traffic. That goes wide of the net. Jumping out in front of the goal and nearly getting a piece on that was Anaheim's Derek Grant. Now a shot. They score! From the near circle, it's Sean Couturier. He's got another one. Couturier's eighth in the last 11 games. Off the top pipe and in, it's 2-0 Flyers. Gostisbehere ahead to Couturier at center. He avoids a man. Now he's in 2-on-1. Here's Couturier. Shoots. He scores! Sean Couturier wins it with his third career overtime goal. And the Flyers, with less than 4 seconds left in overtime, come back to beat the Pens 2-1.
Pleased to be joined by Sean Couturier of the Philadelphia Flyers. Elliot, I think we should start by asking Sean the same question we asked of both Ryan Nugent-Hopkins and Tomas Hertl. First of all, congratulations. Wedding this past summer just outside of Montreal. So congratulations there.
Thank you.
And here is our 31 Thoughts, the podcast standard question for all hockey players at this NHL media car wash this season. Elliot.
Who was the most hammered player at your wedding?
I don't know. I mean, I mean, it's such a busy day for me and my wife, but I'll tell you, the last man standing was Michael Raffel. So I don't know if he was the drunkest or, but he was the last man standing.
He was the king of the castle at the end of it. Well, listen, congratulations.
Thank you.
And I know you and the rest of your Flyers teammates and certainly fans are very much looking forward to the season. Before we get to the Flyers, I want to ask about you specifically. It takes a while for a player to get into the Selke conversation, but once you're in it almost every year. Did you find that before you became one of the players who was talked about for Selke Trophy, that you were having, you know, wonderful seasons as a high-end two-way player in the NHL, but people just didn't recognize it?
Yeah, I think my game since I was 18 years old defensively has been really good. It's something I take pride in. I think the offensive numbers weren't not quite as wow as other guys or other guys that were drafted with me that year. But once I got a little more opportunity offensively, I think I showed what I could do. And these last few years have been really been great for me in both sides of the ice and stats wise as well.
How much of that defensive acumen comes from your dad growing up?
I don't know if it comes from my dad. I think it's more in juniors. My first year in Drummondville, we had a really good team. We won the Q President Cup.
Yep.
I had Guy Boucher as a coach, so I learned a lot that year on to be responsible defensively because I was mostly a third, fourth line guy at that age, coming in the queue on a good team. So if I wanted to play in the third, or if I wanted to play some minutes, I had to be responsible defensively. And I think it made me realize that, you know, if you want to be one of those guys that, you know, you have the offensive talent or skills to produce, and but late in the game when you're up a goal, you want to be reliable and you want to be out there, you want to be that guy. So I had to be responsible, and I think at 16, that's really where I took pride and learned a lot of the defensive side of the game.
When you just said there, Sean, that I don't know if I'd credit to my dad, I was wondering if you wanted to say my dad was a terrible defensive player.
Yeah, I don't know. He put up big numbers offensively. I don't really remember him being one of the defensive guys, or never even heard of him playing some defensive minutes, but... No, he was still a great player. I mean, got to play in the NHL for a little bit. So,
yep.
How much of a head start do you think that gave you? We always talk about second generation guys. How much of a?
I think it really helped me. Growing up, I was just a young guy, but he retired at a young age. So, but being around him in the locker room, from what I remember, on the ice or by the bench, just being around him, seeing pros what they do. Obviously, I was really young, so don't really remember much, but. Then him being assistant coach or GM in Bathurst now, got to grow up around junior players. So I was 10, 11 years old, sometimes practicing with junior players that are 18, 19, 20 years old. So I get to see what they do. Kind of helps me, you know, I think grow as a player, grow as a young hockey player a little quicker than others. Obviously, it's I'm lucky to have that opportunity, and I kind of, you know, took advantage of it.
There's a lot of guys in the NHL who have tight relationships with their dads. It's interesting now to see how many sons of former players are making it in the NHL. So I'm curious about, like, after a game, do you talk, do you text? Does he ever say, hey, Sean, what about this? Or how much do you say, Dad, what do you see in my game right now? What's your relationship like that way?
Well, now that I'm getting older, or, you know, it's been a few years I've been around, maybe not right after the game, or not as, I mean, I remember my first few years, it was every game, every day, we'd call each other. You know, now that I've been around and know a little more about the game and the league, it's kind of, you know, we talk to each other as often, but not as deep as it used to be, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But no, it's still nice when you're going through a tougher time, and he kind of, you know, keeps you grounded, reminds you of little things. He's never really been hard on me at all, and I'm thankful for that. He's always just given me little tips here and there, and I kind of took him when I could.
Jeff before asked you about, you know, your defensive game. You came through Toronto last year, and you were on a real tear. And we were talking to a few of us reporters about your goal scoring, and you said, look, I always felt I could score. And I said, okay, so 50, and you just laughed. and you said, I'm not making any predictions about 50 or anything like that. But, you know, I liked your confidence. I liked the fact that you said, I always believed I had that side to my game. I wonder if there's anything else you look at and say, I can do this really well, maybe better than either people know me for or I get credit for.
Yeah, I mean, I know what kind of player I am. I know what I can do. I don't really try to speak it. I try to show it on the ice and show what I can do and what I'm made of. But, you know, one thing I've been told since I'm young is it's my skating. It's slow. But I remember hearing a quote from Luke Robitaille, like, he wasn't the best skater, but it didn't matter. He was first on the puck. Like, it's kind of that philosophy I try to have. Mm-hmm. You know, there's always going to be people putting you down or finding critics in your game. But I try to prove them wrong or control what I can control and show what I'm made of.
There's an old saying in hockey, I'm sure you've heard it. If you have a good goalie, it's 70% of your team. If you don't, it's 100. How much does Carter Hart mean to the Philadelphia Flyers? And how much did he mean to you guys when he got called up last season?
Well, he was huge for us. He was, what, a sixth, seventh goalie called up for us. So, but he, as soon as he stepped in, he gave us confidence. He kind of took over. We didn't really know what to expect, but he was great. He had a lot of success with us. He made our team better. Yeah, he gave us that confidence that we needed and stability in net. And you just want him to keep improving, keep getting better. He's a really young kid, but he's really mature as well. He's beyond his years. The way he prepares, the way he takes the game seriously, it's pretty incredible at his age. And you know he has a bright future. We just want to surround him as well as we can and let him be the star he's going to be.
I'm just curious, in your room last year, when all that stuff was going on with the goalies and guys kept on getting hurt and things were going on, what were you guys all saying to each other about what was happening?
I mean, it's not something we control, but it was tough seeing, never knowing who was going to be the next goalie. I mean, when you go through 7 or what, 8 goalies, I think we went through last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we tied the record 7 before Christmas.
Yes.
That's pretty crazy. Like, you're not even halfway through the year and you don't even know who your goalies are going to be for the rest of the year. So obviously it was tough, but for us, it didn't really change. I mean, we were going out there and playing. We don't control really who's in net at that point it was, guys were falling down like flies. So it was tough, but I guess we found a way to stay focused and make a push in the end.
Spinal Tap drummers, Philadelphia Flyers goaltenders. It was quite the scene last year. Really quick, I thought Travis Sanheim had a fantastic season for you guys last season. Who did, as members of the media, who did we miss talking about? Like, in your room, who did you say or look at and say, how come they're not talking more about this guy? He's having a great season. Who was that guy in your room that didn't get the credit he deserved?
I think Travis Sanheim is one guy that doesn't get as much credit as others because we have so many young, talented D-men. One guy that was really solid for us was Robert Hagg. He doesn't put the numbers stats-wise, but he's really solid defensively. I think he's tough to play against. He's really physical, and he kind of brings that stability back there of being solid. But those two, I mean, we have so many young D-men, and we hear Provorov, Gostisbehere, but those two guys, Sanheim and Hagg, are big parts of our defensive squad. And yeah, they're two great players in different ways, but they're as important as any other guy.
It's a great answer.
I would have said myself. You just said,
you should talk about me more, guys.
Me. It's definitely me.
Give us more reasons to talk about you. Good luck this season with the Philadelphia Flyers, Sean.
Thank you very much.
October, the month every team has hope. But it's also time to start thinking about getting to and from the rink yourself. And there's no better way to haul your equipment to the rink than in the next generation GMC Sierra. Why? The Multi-Pro Tailgate. Whether you're 6 or 60, loading one hockey bag or a bunch, the Multi-Pro Tailgate makes access to the truck bed easy. That's because it turns into a step that's 4 feet wide and can hold up to 375 pounds. Meaning, even when your legs are burning after a tough skate, the Sierra has you covered. That is Sean Couturier of the Philadelphia Flyers on 31 Thoughts, the podcast. Want to get to Tomas Hertl of the San Jose Sharks. And Elliot, you've talked about playing in quiet markets. And so sometimes hockey fans don't get a chance to see slash experience the personality of certain players because they play in markets where there's not a whole lot of media coverage. I can only imagine how big Tomas Hertl would be if he played on the Rangers.
For sure. And it's not because we're calling San Jose a backwater or anything like that. But look at all the dynamic personalities on that team. It, as outgoing and funny as he is, it's hard to stand out when you've got Burns and Thornton and Kane and Carlson and Couture. It's a lot. And Vlasic, you know, he's a really confident, loud guy himself too. So you get lost in all that. I enjoyed this one. You know, you're always looking to learn something about people you don't really know. And I was told he was going to be one of our better guests.
Truth.
And I thought, all right, let's see it. I'll borrow a Brian Burke line. I'm from Missouri. Show me. And he showed us. And he was one of our better guests.
There are just some people that you get the sense has never had a bad day in his life. This is Tomas Hertl of the San Jose Sharks on 31 Thoughts, the podcast. Enjoy.
Pops back to center ice. Leon Draisaitl loses on the check to Hertl. Hertl poking at it. Hertl holding it. Hertl handing off. Here comes Couture, 2-on-1 to Hertl. Shot! Score! Tomas Hertl wins it for the Sharks in overtime with 2:20 to play. Good body check by Hertl. Knocked Ovi off the puck, and Hertl is off to the races with it. Down the right side, he comes across the line. Lead Couture. Back for Hertl. Shot! Score! Tomas Hertl wins it for the Sharks, and he gets the hat trick. And it is a absolutely devastatingly tired group of Sharks players that streams off the bench to congratulate Tomas Hertl. On the power play to the Sharks line, Burns checking it, can't clear it, kept in by Theodore, throws front of the net. Vlasic sends it ahead to Hertl. He's shorthanded, he's moving in, he shoots, he scores! Tomas Hertl wins in the second overtime with a shorthanded goal. A pile of players are surrounding Tomas Hertl, but an equal amount coming over to Bob Martin Jones, who made a record 58 saves. The Sharks force game 7.
Tomas Hertl of the San Jose Sharks joins us. And Elliot, I think we should begin this interview with the same question we just asked about 30 minutes ago to Ryan Nugent Hopkins. And that is, first off, congratulations. You got married this summer. And Elliot's question to Ryan Nugent Hopkins was this: who was the drunkest NHL player at your wedding?
It's really hard. We have just great time. You know, I don't know if you saw, we got like almost everybody without t-shirt or boys. So I think all guys who was there, they have pretty like good shape, you know, just like it's tough to say one guy special, but everybody have a couple beers. And I think they're not used to for Czech alcohol too. It's called Slovitz. So some guys have really tough time to get going because you get like two shots and you can like don't even really know. So everybody have just great time. It was more important, but a lot
that's
of awesome. Fun.
That's the thing. The more people are like that, you know, it was a good wedding.
Oh yeah, it was like everybody have just great time. Nobody was thirsty. That was the most important.
No tongues hanging out. That's great. You know, one of the interesting things about your team to me is this rivalry you now have with the Vegas Golden Knights. You know, we've talked on this podcast and elsewhere about, you know, when Los Angeles and Anaheim were top of the division, those games were fantastic. Those games were battles. And it seems as if San Jose and Vegas is developing something similar. You, of course, scored a big double OT winner last year, which puts a smile on your face as I mentioned it. Your thoughts on playing against Vegas?
Yeah, I think like before the Vegas was a little bit LA, you know, it was always the beat LA, and it was big rival. I love these games, but over the last 2 years, I think the Vegas, you know, one of the biggest rivals in our NHL is just 2 years. And I love these games, you know, it was for sure last, we kind of won one. They beat us last year, we beat them this year. And I love these games. I think both buildings are great, you know, where they have, I think, surprisingly, like great friends there too. Atmosphere is great. Our building is great. And the rivalry is just keeping, you know, getting through the roof. And I think it will get over the years more and more. And I just love play these games.
Game 7 I mean, that's a fascinating game. Down three goals, down, I mean, you come back 3-1 in the series, and you guys win that game. Between the second and the third, in that second intermission, that last game, you're down three pucks. What's the mood in the room? What's the conversation? Take us into the room in that second intermission, game seven.
It's for sure, you know, hard, you know, it's 3-0 in our building. People are a little quiet. I don't know, everybody kind of like, what now, but we still have, you know, 20 minutes left. I think it was Pav or like, I think it myself, we just try, you know, guys, we got last 20 minutes. Whatever happened, let's just put everything in the tank. If you don't want to like vacation in next week, we have to like try it. Like it's hockey, you know, we can score 2 goals in 1 minute. It doesn't matter if we score, you know, last 10 minutes or like first, just play out the best and whatever happened is just happen. So it was kind of, you know, whatever coaches say, players say, just let's try it, whatever happens. Just put everything so we can just head up and walking, you know, tall from the building, you know, just like we should do a little bit better. So we try, you know, and we somehow we did it.
You know, I'm more curious about what the atmosphere was like after the game, because you're sitting there and you've got the euphoria, the excitement of that incredible comeback, but also your captain's hurt. And so I'm wondering, what was the room like after you won the game?
For sure, it was like so much emotion. First moment, what happened, you know, everybody, what happened. You can see Jumbo, you know, helping to Pav on his face, you know, like you see blood, it's always scary. Like even if I can see like from Vegas what just happened, you know, if it's always, you don't want to see guys hurt, you know, even if be like divorce enemy, you just don't, you don't want to be them hurt, you know, because it's, you know, it's just ugly. But like Jumbo say, hey, boys, you got 5 minutes, let's try it, you know. And we just like did jump on the ice, we, you know, we score all these goals. And after the game, I never heard biggest loud in the building ever, you know. It was like we won the cup almost, you know. I think never happened again this game like that. Everybody was so exciting, but for sure, right away, like everybody had whatever path. He was like fresh and feel good, but you can see he was a couple stitches, he got gone, he felt a little better. So it was for sure better, but everybody's super exciting and like be talking. Like, what just happened, you know, like, Jumbo say, that was probably my the best game ever. Like, you know, I wasn't even on the ice for the goals. I was just, just boys be, like, talking because I was on the ice for all, you know, these goals. So, like, boys been talking, like, you guys, you should see our bench. We almost, like, we jumping, like, so high and, like, get celebrating so big. It was just special moment, too, like, in my career. Like, the biggest probably almost win. What we did, even when we get the finals, yeah. And still, it was for sure like, it's like you get farther, but this game was just so special.
You know, it feels, Tomas, like you've been in the NHL a long time. You're only 25 years old.
Yeah.
Do you feel now that you're a veteran in the league, a veteran on the team? I mean, you are still young, but I mean, man, you've been, it feels like you've been around a long time. You've done so much. How do you feel on this team?
Like last year, I was like, that's my 6th year already. And like, I was like out, Banker and Timo is only youngest. I'm the youngest guy on the team. I'm like, what, how? So it's kind of funny, but for sure, I think over the last 2 years, I think kind of jump, not like for veteran, but like for just the leader, be a leader of the team. Now with, you know, Pav gone, I think it's another steps to, for me, be the bigger leader. I think I a little bit proved it last year. Know just how to play in the locker room, but I want to step up now more and be the guy, you know, like just it's last minute, we need goal or we need like we just stay without a goal. So I want to be the guy, hey Pete, go within the face of, go to score goal or like go to block shot. Just no, just coaches, but all team like look at to me and like kind of like expect it for me, be the guy, change the game. And if it's I'm not doing well, I want to just be kind of the voice for the locker room too. So I think for me, for Cooch now, and for even for Timo, like it's time to step up and be there for the guys.
You know, it's interesting you talk about this because, you know, San Jose has a very unique, impressive culture as a team. Burns, crazy guy. Thornton, like just one of the oldest players in the league, fun-loving guy. Couture, very blunt guy. Vlasic, very blunt guy. And you know what your teammates say about you? They say that you are a big part of that too. Like, maybe you don't get a lot of attention, but you've always got a big smile on your face. You love to laugh. Those pictures you sent out when you were recuperating with a fun all the time guy or whatever that was. Like, they say you don't get credit for how big a part you are of the general fun and goofiness of that room. Is that true?
I think so. I tried for sure. First couple of years, they always my fun because, you know, my English wasn't great, so I messed up. But I kind of like it because everybody laughed, everybody was joking around. But now I'm always, you know, the smiley guy on the team. But I love just smile. So I try make it jokes, make it fun too around it. But for sure, we got a lot of big personality. Now we got, you know, signed Eric Carlson, another big name.
Evander's a big personality too.
So we got a lot of personality. So I try to kind of be middle, the funny guy, you know, but I think I prove it on the ice. I can be one of the leaders, but I try even locker room, like what I just say, talking to guys for sure. Media intention is for, you know, like Burns, Carlson, Kane, it's like big marketing guys too. So they like, you know, big Burns have beer, everybody like know him right away. And I'm kind of for sure smiley, but kind of behind the door. But I try it, you know, just with the leadership in our team, be there for the guys.
What is the craziest off the ice thing you've seen as a member of the San Jose Sharks by one of your teammates?
Oh, it's for sure. You learn, like, when you watch you, like, Bernsie sometimes, like, he's so special, but he's such a great guy. You know, just like on the trip we going for one day, he got, you know, the backpacks and everything, you know, like the from military stuff. And just we go to Arizona, he got hats, you know, but it's like 100 degrees there. It's just looking around, it's just fun, but he's a great guy. So it's sometimes watching him is fun, just what he's doing. Or he's like, for sure, like how he dress, you know, if you get NHL, everybody have black or blue or whatever. And you see like guys have, you know, special, you know, green and different colors. It's something you learn, but it's actually cool because that's why he's so special, you know, and he got special personality. It's nice to have him around.
You know, people that have played with Erik Karlsson will always have that one Erik Karlsson moment where, how did he do that? I can't believe he just did that. Have you seen that from him? Has there been a moment, either in a game, in a practice? I mean, the Hoffman pass and the Boston series has always been the one that people will point to, like, how did he make that? But has there been a couple of moments for you, even playing one season with Karlsson, where you've said, I didn't think that was possible? How did he just do that?
Yeah, for sure. That's what I was kind of expecting from him. Oh, now I get the passes, you know, for sure. When he get new team, whatever. But in December, I don't know what was the time, he got like so many points, so many assists. And I think every time you behind the player, he just skate and he kind of looking right and he give you heavy pass behind it. I guess I think against LA, right away breakaway, nice score. And like how he do it, or even through sticks, it's even on the ice, his passes are amazing. Sometimes even now we play like scrimmages back home, and how he sometimes pass and his vision is one of the best in NHL. And that's why he is, because he can pass without knowing through the sticks, and just he do that, you know.
Who's the hardest passer on your team?
Like, hardest is for sure Bernsie. Sometimes you think your stick will broke, but because he's so strong. But like, they like two different, you know, players. You know, Bernsie is like more shooting, like score more heavy, and Erik is like he got the vision, the passing, and when they play together, so Erik passing, Bernsie scoring, you know, that's kind of what they're doing.
Well, one of my favorite things about Marian Hossa, who is one of my favorite hockey players, is how you can never give him a bad pass. He could take any pass, not a problem. Is that something that you've always worked on? Is that something that you or other teammates take pride in, the ability to take hard passes? Because I've seen Burns fire laser beams to you guys, but like, how are you taking that pass? Like, how is that not bouncing off your stick and into the season ticket holder's laps?
Yeah, you have to learn, because that was first word when I get, like, you play NHL, it's the best league, so bad pass doesn't exist, you know. That was like first word, and like, yeah, you have to learn, because sometimes even you can't, if you're skating and the D-man, you have, like, actually the players have to give you pass on the skate because the stick is behind it. Yep. So if you just stick, you have to kick it and you go. So you have to learn, because if you can do it, it's like make your life way easier, because if you get it from skate or in the air, you know, it's like it's so many pucks, you know, after you can get breakaways or something. So for sure, if you from Burns, especially, you got every day on practice, and he doing it on purpose. So if he needed to give a hair pass, you have to like handle it. So you have to just work on it and get better. But it's really helpful if you can do that.
You know, I'm really impressed listening to Thomas. Like, a lot of players that come from overseas, English not the first language, even after being in the league as long as you have, they're not comfortable doing these. You're pretty comfortable. Like, how long did it take you to feel okay doing stuff like this?
So I'm 6 years now. Probably after like 4 years, I actually, like, I don't mind it and start talking about it. And for sure, first year, I used to hate going for team dinners because it was like, you know, we got 20 guys and I was like, I say one bad word and I will listen all there. So if you go with one guy, I used to be like, you know, Tommy Wingles, he was kind of my guy. So he was kind of, no, say like that, you know. So I kind of learned over the year, but now I don't mind it because I hate to be quiet on the locker room. Like, even back home, I always be loud. If you get like, even back home, in just in my language, I must be like, everybody has to listen to me. So I hate it. That's why I kind of learn, because I always try, you know, even if I say wrong, I was kind of loud, smiling with that. So sometimes the smile just help, you know, and I just like to talk to and be like part of the, you know, the meetings and just the funny stories or movies, whatever. I just like to talk in. So that's why a little bit helped me.
I think this will be the final question. I want to ask you about Czech hockey players, historical Czech hockey players. And maybe the obvious answer is Jaromír Jágr. And it's a good one. Every time I talk to Bobby Holík, he talked to me about players like Jan Suchý, who's considered, you know, the Bobby Orr of Czech hockey. And Jágr became what Jágr, he's still playing. Who is your favorite, or some of your favorite Czech hockey players?
Like, that time for sure was Jágr, because when he was kind of a number one guy, you know, when I born and he was in NHL. So over the years, he was kind of like middle age. He had the scabs, he won winning two trophies. Yeah. I love Pittsburgh Penguins because him and Lemieux. And so I got all Pittsburgh Penguins stuff in my, you know, room. So that was for sure him, and everybody was looking to him, you know. And the year he was already 40, I was getting NHL. I played first games, you know, in World Championship with him in line. It was super cool experience to, you know, when I was young, to next 20 years play with him. So kind of dream come true, you know, again, not just playing NHL, but playing with Jágr in one team. So for me, was for sure him.
Best butt in the history of the NHL, Jágr?
Yeah, for sure. Now, but I try and take it now from using my butt to get involved, like taking the history with my butt. But for sure, he's, you know, huge and big butt. But I think I trying similar things. I scored this year a couple of goals using my butt, and I always saying that. That's why I sometimes eat extra chocolate so I can get a bigger butt.
That's great. Thomas, thanks so much for stopping by. Good luck this season with the Sharks.
Thank you, guys. Thank you very much.
I'll keep my money in the bank.
So all of you listening to this, you know who David Amber is. He's the host of the Maple Leafs Regional Games, and he hosts the back end of our Saturday night Hockey Night in Canada doubleheaders. Well, David and I, we like to wager. We like to bet on maybe a couple games, who's going to score the first goal, time of the last goal, things like that. What we do is we go to oddshark.net, the source for the latest odds from leading authorities, expert editorial content, and detailed matchup picks. Looking for statistics and trends for an upcoming game? Oddshark.net has those too, and it's free. Expert in-depth analysis, stats, numbers, and trends to help you make the sharp game day picks, whether you want to get it on the football action, tonight's hockey games, or anything in between. Go to oddshark.net. This is not a gambling site, but it's very useful for information. And I would advise you, David Amber, especially if you're listening, to go there, because I'm tired of taking all your money without competition, and you need some help.
Money in the bank.
He's eating chocolates, Elliot. He's growing his butt, Elliot. He's Tomáš Hertl of the San Jose Sharks. And he's a skilled player.
Well, as somebody who has eaten a lot of chocolate, I can tell you that's going to work. But at least he's doing it for a purpose. Mine was just too big for no good reason. Guy's going to be a star. If he isn't a star already, like that team is starting to turn over.
I was going to say, here's the thing. Like now it's over to Logan Couture and that next generation of San Jose Shark player. He's going to be riding right there with that next wave of San Jose Sharks. And fans are the beneficiaries. This guy is a wonderful personality. I'll tell you what. One of my favorite moments in our 2 days in Chicago, Elliot, was talking to Jacob Slavin, not on the mic, but off the mic. So after this interview, we got together and compared pictures of our adopted children.
Mm-hmm.
And I will take that moment, and Amel took a couple of pictures of it and sent it to me. It was really, really nice, really thoughtful, and showed my wife, and Shirley loved it as well. Jacob Slavin is not just an outstanding elite-level defenseman, but he's just a good person. Just a wonderful human being. What are your thoughts on Jacob Slavin?
You're right. He's a very, very decent guy, a very interesting guy. Another guy who a lot of people don't know because he plays in Carolina, but started to get an idea about in the playoffs last year when he flirted with a record for most assists in the playoffs without scoring a goal. And, of course, the team went to the Eastern Conference Final. I just remember him posting the photo on Instagram of the baby with the face hidden on the day of a playoff game against Washington. He's just a pretty mature guy. Like, that's it. You look at him and you say, that's a low-maintenance good player. And teams love low-maintenance good players.
There's going to be zero problems, and it's going to be all positive around Jacob Slavin. Here he is on 31 Thoughts, the podcast.
In the next couple of weeks or so, as the puck goes back to the point, quick wrist shot by Slavin, he scores right from the draw. As Slavin from the left point let a wrist shot go, Jacob Slavin with a hat trick, his first of the NHL, 10:57, as he just roared up the ice and drilled it through the legs of Greiss, who is the goalkeeper of Rutgers.
Loose play, forced by Stamkos, Kucherov.
Okay, Elliot, Jacob Slavin wrecked something for me last year. Let me explain. Every year, I keep a couple of hipster players in my hip pocket to break out as part of conversations. Oh, sure, Roman Josi's a good defenseman. Oh, sure, Drew Doughty's a good defenseman. But you need to see Jacob Slavin. You need to watch Carolina more. I do the same thing with Jared Spurgeon. So Jacob Slavin, thanks for ruining that for me. This year was your debutante's ball, or last year was rather, where everybody found out exactly how good you are. How was last season from your point of view? Did it feel like you were getting more attention? Did it feel like you were getting more headlines, more media, more requests, just more you out there?
Yeah.
Not a hipster anymore?
No, not hipster anymore.
Not the hipster hockey player?
Definitely towards more playoffs, and obviously with the team success there, it got a little crazy. But no, it was a fun year last year. I mean, there's just the team as a whole making it back to the playoffs, and obviously the first time since my career doing that. And so
Let me follow up another selfish line of questioning here then. Yeah. I can't use you as my hipster pick anymore, as the guy that everyone's sleeping on but should see. Who's the new hockey hipster player in your mind? Who's everyone sleeping on?
Still with Carolina, Brett Pesce.
Yep.
Brett Pesce, I mean.
I would have bet $1 billion that that's exactly who you would have said.
That's exactly what I would have said.
No. Safe answer.
No, he really is. Obviously, we got to play together during our second season. And no, he's unbelievable, though. I would say he's right there in that mix.
You know, one of the things, Jeff, that people say about Jacob is that he's low-key one of the more interesting players in the National Hockey League. The adoption that you had very public last year, you put the picture out. I think it was on a game day against the Capitals in the first round on Instagram.
Yeah, with the flower over the face.
Yes, yes. And, you know, you met your wife on social media. Yes. You know, you're very proud of your faith. Mm-hmm. And although you don't, the players say that you're not in anyone's face about it, but you're very proud of it. They say that for a guy who's not that well known, he's one of the more interesting people in the National Hockey League. What do you think is the most interesting thing about you?
Whew, that's a tough one. I think you hit it spot on. I'm definitely very strong in my faith, but I think there's a point where you don't want to stand up in the locker room and just beat a Bible over people's heads, right? But no, so definitely that's what keeps me going every day. And but most interesting thing about me, oh, I don't know. That's a tough one. I think all those things maybe combine together.
You're a darling of the analytics community, as you probably well know. How much do you pay attention to that, if at all, or do you just focus on the boxcar numbers and the goals and assists?
Yeah, honestly, I don't understand half of that Corsi stuff, and so don't pay too much attention to it. Just try to go out there and play my game every night.
So you came to this thing last year. You've had big life changes. How are you a different person now?
You get different perspectives, obviously. Hockey to me has never been number one anyways, but my faith has always come first. But now it's just a whole different aspect, adding a daughter into that, and just being able to go out there with the perspective in mind that I got a family at home. And then obviously as she grows up, it's going to be something where I don't want to let her see me get frustrated by the game ever, or anything of that sorts.
That's a really refreshing comment. Hockey is not number one.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell you how many kids we talk to at the combine every year in Buffalo, and whether it's they've been told by their agents to project this or they think the teams want to hear it, they all say, you know, hockey's the number one thing in my life. It's always been the number one thing in my life. Was there ever a point where it was the number one thing in your life? And if it wasn't, at what point were you comfortable saying, hockey's not number one? There are more important things.
Yeah, I mean, growing up, I grew up in a Christian home. And so it was really when I came to Chicago, actually, for juniors, that my mindset kind of changed. And I really grew in my faith during that time, to where it was a transition from, okay, I'm a hockey player that happens to be a Christian, to, no, I'm a Christian that happens to play hockey. And when that kind of transition in my mindset changed to that, so probably from juniors on, it was, no, hockey is just something I get to use as a way to glorify God, and I'm just going to go out there and just play to the best of my abilities. But at the end of the day, it's God that gets the glory, and hockey is just a sport.
Storm Surge. What did you first think when it was pitched? And at any point, did you look at any of them and say, I'm not sure about this one?
I thought it was interesting when it was first pitched. I didn't know how it would come across, but after we did that first one and the fans loved it, we just started to have fun with it. And I think most of the ideas we had out there were pretty solid. We had some in the bag still that we weren't able to use, that we had on specific nights or whatever. Yeah. But we had a lot of fun with it. I think the guys in the locker room had fun with it, and coming up with the ideas was always fun too.
Did you have a favorite one? For me, it was baseball, because it was, I mean, it looked like it was the Bautista moment from the Jays.
Yeah.
Texas
well, yeah,
Rangers.
Yeah, well, with Fogel being from Toronto, and he wanted to, I think he got the good bat flip in there and everything. But for me, I thought the Evander Holyfield one was sweet.
What's this? We got some boxing gloves on Jordan Martinook. We have a ring. The lights go down. It's time to spar. And here comes the four-time heavyweight champion of the world, Evander Holyfield.
Martinook might be out of his weight class, John.
Just slightly. No official weigh-in for this one. And Martinook is also going right into a rope-a-dope early. Look at this. Evander Holyfield, Jordan Martinook. Oh! That's it.
Came in before the game, gave us a nice little pregame speech, and then obviously to have him out there with us after the game.
What was the speech like? What does Real Deal talk to you about?
he was talking about what it takes to be a champion, and if you want to be the best, you got to beat the best, and that's kind of how he grew up like that, or in his career. And so it was pretty cool to see him out there, and obviously Martinook played it off well.
Yep.
And just the character that Martinook is, it was perfect. Yeah.
Tell you what, you lost me with basketball though.
Yeah. Well, that was March Madness.
No, I get it. Yeah. The only reason why is I'm thinking to myself, someone could get hurt here. Like, I get it's all funny. Like,
yeah, yeah.
What if someone gets hurt during this celebration?
Yeah.
Like, it's like, oof. And basketball to me was like,
Yeah, we went through that a couple different ones, like hoping no one would get hurt. But no, Reamer, he said he was pretty comfortable out there being able to, he didn't have to jump too high. I mean, their foot rim wasn't 10 feet. So he said he felt pretty comfortable. But no, if someone got hurt doing those, I think that would definitely be bad.
Carolina fans, I can still recall Stanley Cup final against the Oilers, that game 7, and nobody sat down. The entire game, nobody sat. Normally there's a few crazies that'll stay up for the whole game. Like everybody, every fan in the rink was standing, and it was one of the loudest rinks I'd ever heard. It was an amazing atmosphere, a wonderful thing. Both crowds, I mean, Edmonton's crowd was fantastic too, but Carolina's was the next level. As a player, what are your fans like for you?
Playoffs was something else. I mean, I think towards the tail end of the season, the building started filling up more and more. That game against New Jersey when we had to win that night, and if Montreal had lost, we clinched. And so after the game, the scores came up. We had won, and the scores came up, and the crowd just went nuts. But then during the playoffs, and I don't want to be biased, but honestly, it was probably one of the loudest buildings I've ever played in throughout the playoffs. And so, but as a player playing there, they're awesome. I mean, it's they're excited. Going out throughout the community, it's nice because it's such a low-key city that you don't get recognized too much, but the fans are pretty respectful when they do meet you or whatever. And so it's nice from that standpoint. But then from the hockey standpoint and inside the rink, they're awesome. I think they have fun with it, and it's the best part.
Justin Williams is taking a little pause. Thoughts on your captain?
I mean, he's earned every right to make that decision with the career that he's had. And as a team, we have to move forward as if he is out, but and just continue the culture change that he brought, him and Roddy brought last year, our coach. I think they were both the spearhead of that. And so as a team, we have to move forward without him. But obviously, I think if he ever decided to come back at any point in this year, as a locker room, we would welcome him back with open arms. And
I'm surprised more guys don't do that.
Yeah.
I don't have to tell you how grueling an NHL season is.
Yeah.
And how much you put your body through the entire season, and you're expected to play every single game. And Canadian sports fans now know what load management is through the Kawhi Leonard season. And yours is a taxing sport. Like I've always said, like 82 games is plus playoffs is that damages bodies.
Yeah, well, it's a long season. I'm feeling it. I was healthy. I was thankful to be healthy after the playoffs had ended and didn't have really anything too nagging. And so, but even that extra 6 weeks that I had gotten previous summers from not making the playoffs, it was August came and it was time to get back on the ice already this summer, and it came quick. And so it is a long season sometimes. Like there's a sticking point between probably like game almost like 30 to 50 where you're just like, oh, this is the middle. It's tough right now. And you're like, your body's starting to get tired, but then you get over that hump and then I think adrenaline kind of carries you the rest of the way.
Sort of after trade deadline, it kind of picks up again for you guys, I think.
Yeah,
but then there's that like January, early February. Ugh, let's just get through it.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, so Pesci is the new Slavin in my vocabulary now, according to you.
I would say.
My new hipster pick.
He could have been there previous years too. He really is solid though. I mean, obviously I've got to play with him. I've got to watch him and off the ice. We're really good friends and great teammate guy. But no, on the ice, yeah, I would definitely say so.
You're a great defenseman. No wonder you're in the Norris balloting last season, and you will be for subsequent years. Thanks so much for this, Jacob.
Yeah, thank you very much.
I'm disappointed in myself, Elliot Friedman. It's been a couple of weeks into the season now, and I haven't found a hipster hockey player to replace Jacob Slavin yet. Who could that guy be? We have a lot of hockey still to go. What did you make of Slavin?
Well, I rudely had to leave in the middle, and it was disappointing. I've spoken to him a couple of times now. I really like him. I find him a very intriguing person.
I loved his answer when I said, who should I go to next? If it's not going to be you, who's going to be my guy? Right away, Brett Pesci. Right away, it's a teammate. Right away, it's someone that he can support. Had a wonderful time talking to Jacob Slavin of the Carolina Hurricanes. And that ends this podcast. But before we go, I would like to remind you, if you like memorable band names, Emil, well done, buddy. If you like memorable band names, cool records, and long song titles, you'll love this song, Record and Band. They're also on their North American tour to boot. Here is the New Pornographers with Falling Down the Stairs of Your Smile from their new record, Deep Breath, in the Morse code of brake lights. What happened to just calling songs Freebird? Thanks for joining us today. Enjoy the new pornographers. You look just like